This is Alan Nathan of Radio America sitting in for Greg Corumbus and reporting for WorldNet Daily. Disappointing to most is the idea of continuing with our current healthcare system with all of its inadequacy. However, more petrifying to all is the prospect of a remedy that's far worse than the problem that it's designed to correct. Helping to better understand all of this is GOP Representative Marsha Blackburn, Republican from the great state of Tennessee, serving the good folks out of the 7th District. Representative Blackburn, thanks for joining us today.
It is so good to be with you. Thank you.
You have repeatedly argued that if anyone wanted to better understand the pitfalls of universal health care by way of the single-payer option, they need go no farther than Tennessee's history on this very issue. Tell us what happened with 10Care in your state when you guys tried to incorporate managed care in your Medicaid program, and how lessons from one can be, if you will, teachable about the other. Teachable, of course, being a term for which the president has demonstrated a recent fondness.
And you're exactly right. Tennessee learned these lessons the hard way. In 1994, there was a plan put in place in Tennessee. It was the test case for Hillary Care, or public option health care, if you will. And it was done by the executive order of the Office of the Governor. So the legislature couldn't tweak this program and couldn't address some of the problems that grew out of this program. And what it did, it sounds very much like what they're doing today. They said, oh, we can have the government manage the financing of insurance and the delivery of care provided from that insurance. And what we want to be able to do is save money. And with the money that we save, we can insure children and the uninsurable.
And I want to let everybody know that the congressman wrote a great article about this, along with one Phil Rowe. And you can see it's posted on Real Clear Politics. The title is Lessons for Healthcare Reform. And one of the things you point out is that private businesses dropped coverage for employees and forced them onto state rolls, and that by 2002, enrollment had swelled to 1.4 million people and forced Tennessee's governor to raise taxes and ultimately propose an entirely new state income tax to cover the unforeseen costs. It must have been a nightmare.
Well, it was. We have 800,000 Medicaid eligible in the state of Tennessee. And with those who were uninsured, uninsurable, coming onto the rolls, people trying to opt out of private insurance and move to the gold-plated free government plan, we saw our rolls go up to 1.4 million people. We also saw something else happen, and that was cost shifting. Individuals with private health insurance saw their rates go through the roof. I had employers in my state Senate district. I was in the state Senate in Tennessee when we were trying to battle with funding this. And we had employers in our district who had their health insurance rates double, their private health insurance rates double.
Now, I'll tell you what, switching gears a little bit, but the same vehicle of concern. The Democrats supporting the current health care bills in dispute are pointing now to the AMA's support of them as an example of its justification. Last month, though, the Washington Post and others reported that the AMA was against the health care bills under discussion. As a matter of fact, I'd like you to hear a little bit of a conversation that the AMA president had with the folks at CNN. Have a listen.
Let me ask you if you were for a government-sponsored health insurance option. This is what President Obama wants to do. Very recently, the AMA has said in print, very clearly, we don't think this is the best way to handle this situation. But then you just told Tony that you're for it.
There already exists a system called the Federal Employee Health Benefit Program. Congress has it. Federal employees have it. Why not allow individuals to purchase into that system?
Now, we'll go ahead and talk about the option of the Federal Employee Health Benefit Program in just a bit. The reality is, once they were able to make the Democrats cave in on Medicare reimbursements, something originally marginalized in the initial bills as a cost-cutting counterweight, AMA support began to flourish, even though there was still much to which they objected. What's your view of the AMA's conduct in this debate thus far?
Well, I think that many, and I'm saying this based on what I've heard from physicians and conversations with physicians that I have had the opportunity to visit with, I think they thought they were going to get the Medicare problem solved, the Medicare reimbursement rate solved. And then what has happened is they realized not only was that not going to be solved, but they were going to be paid less for the government-run health care program.
despite the AMA recently supporting Obama's overhaul of the health care reform because the Democrats capitulated on Medicare reimbursements. It does appear that they're in agreement with a lot of Republicans who say that the federal employee health benefit program might be the way to go. I recently talked, as I said, with the president, James Rohack, and while he supports the overall theme of the president's approach, on this point, he opposes the Democrats' resistance. Is this the eventual rub, and should it be? The idea of saying, look, shelve all this, let's just go with the federal employee health benefit program for everybody. Infrastructurally, it's already up. We know that it can't be the exact same caliber because that might bust the bank, but still, we've got the template in place. Why not use it?
Well, and see, there you go. You're on the right track there, because what you're talking about they're wanting to do is completely take the entire healthcare sector, 17% of our economy, and place it under government control. That's the Obama-Pelosi plan. Mm-hmm. And then you have some who say, look, let's drill down on who are, how many people are actually uninsured. And, you know, when you get inside that 40 million number, you find out that there are some people who are young adults who just choose not to buy insurance. You have some people in the country illegally who are not a part of our health care system. Then you have individuals who have maybe they're switching jobs, and they may be without health insurance for a period of 2 to 3 months. They chose not to take COBRA.
Another inconsistency found in these bills is that while folks can choose whether or not they want to keep their current health care plan, there's actually an end date for how long private health care providers are allowed to keep adding to their roles. Now, if they can't add to their roles, there's not enough money to continue offering that private coverage, and this eventually removes from the citizen his and her original right to keep said private insurance because it won't be around anymore. Doesn't that make the president's promise a skosh contradictory?
Well, I think it is a bit, it's up for debate as to exactly what he means by that. Because, you know, if you say, if you like what you have, you can keep it. Well, you could keep it for today, you could keep it for tomorrow, but next year it's going to start changing. And within 3 years, you're not going to be able to have the type coverage and the type access to physicians that you have been able to have in the past.
Congressman, let me run this by you as like the final inquiry in this whole debacle. And of course, we're very happy to have had you on today, and we look forward to it again real soon. Isn't it fair to say that both parties have really screwed this up royally? I mean, Republicans have always stood for removing health care from the workplace and treating it like individually purchased car insurance. The logic has been that by doing so, coverage would become cheaper and HMOs would be far more accommodating to customers because they'd be answerable to more of them. However, to do so would put them at odds with the very HMO lobbyists that contribute to them so heavily because they like having patients bundled together under their corporate clients. And of course, Democrats are no better because while they claim to want lower health care costs, they refuse to discuss the very tort reform that would bring it about because of their slavish allegiance to the American Trial Lawyers Association. You can't lower costs if doctors are ordering ridiculous amounts of tests just to protect themselves in court. Of course, their skyrocketing premiums also add to the price tag. So what I'm trying to say is it looks as if the GOP are taking millions from an organization that makes them want to go in opposition to their own principles, just as the Democrats are. So isn't it fair to point out that both of these parties have, from time to time, equally been disingenuous?
Well, I think that there is fault that can be found with both sides. I think that what the American people want is the rhetoric to stop, and they would like to see some health care reforms take place. They want to see the costs come down. They do not want to see it increase. They do not want to see a bureaucrat placed in the exam room between them and their physician. They want access to be easier and not as cumbersome. And when an insurance company sells them a product, they want them to have to make good on it. I have heard from so many women who were canceled. Their insurance company actually canceled them after they got breast cancer. Or they canceled someone after they developed a chronic heart situation, and then you couldn't get anyone to write insurance for you because it was then deemed a pre-existing condition.
And we're going to have to let that be the final word. This is Alan Nathan of Radio America, sitting in for Greg Corumbus and reporting for WorldNet Daily.